Ladies and gentlemen, it's my pleasure to inaugurate this WTO Public Forum 2010, our annual rendezvous with civil society and the public. The goal of this forum is to enable the multilateral trading system to respond more to the hopes and to the aspirations of all segments of society. Its goal is to promote an open, frank exchange between all actors in our trade sphere on what is working, what is not working in the global trading system at large. Yeah. As you know, this edition of the forum is this year devoted to debating the forces shaping world trade. What are these forces? Are there old forces? Are there new forces? What form do these forces take? Which direction does this lead us to? Are there equal, different weight? It will explore the role of the emerging developing world in impacting our multilateral trading system, the role of new technologies, the role of innovation, and also the impact of growing concerns which have to do with issues such as climate change, energy, food security, human rights, to mention just a few. So what we have before us is a rich menu of sessions that will take us all the way to Friday. A menu which, as you know, has been set by civil society itself, making this truly a forum that belongs first and foremost to you. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your forum. And on behalf of all WTO members and myself, let me say that we look forward to learning from you and interacting with you. And we hope that this forum will enable our members to take the multilateral trading system forward based on the ideas that you will generate. Now, allow me to shortly first comment on the context in which this year's forum convenes, a context that hardly needs elaboration, since many of you may be experiencing it firsthand. One of a global economic downturn, albeit a crisis that is probably beginning to ease. And this downturn has brought the real value of our multilateral trading system to light. This system has acted so far as an insurance policy against protectionism. In fact, a sort of WTO radar screen was created shortly after the crisis to flash all the new trade restrictions that government would impose with the aim of preventing them from spiraling, helping prevent this beggar thy neighbor policies which we witnessed in the 1930s. And I'm pleased to say that so far we have by and large avoided the repeat of past mistakes. WTO disciplines have acted as a containing force of government's worst instincts, which is to shut the foreigner out, or to blame the crisis on the foreigner, often an all too easy path to take. And the good news is that trade volumes are picking up again nicely, after having fallen dramatically during the crisis. Let me now again shortly focus on the topic of this forum, the shaping forces. The multilateral trading system is clearly one of the most advanced engines of a global governance, serving as a precursor for international legal regimes in many other domains. The richness of the program you have created demonstrates the wealth of expectations that we have of the WTO, expectations that we can only afford because of the level of sophistication that the system has reached. In a number of other international organizations, we still see battle lines still being drawn between the North and the South over their governance structure. In other words, their quote-unquote democratization. The G20 has signaled that the institutional reform of some international organizations, which it has listed by name, is necessary. The WTO was not among them. That governance battle has already been fought in the trade sphere, and the outcome is a fairly democratic institution where the voice of the small cannot be ignored. No board, no quotas, one member, one vote is the background institutional rule against which the WTO forges its consensus. The very fact that agriculture is now at the center of the WTO round of trade negotiations also speaks for the power that the South has gained in this organization. In addition, we have a dispute settlement system that has and can allow members to peacefully settle their differences. And in that mechanism, what matters is not the size of a country or its GDP, but the strength of the legal and economic arguments that it succeeds in putting forward. And if I have a very simple message this morning, it is this. There are other battles to fight in the WTO. They may not be of an institutional nature, but they must nevertheless be fought. And I refer here to the need to rebalance the rules of the multilateral trading system in favor of the poor through the completion of our Doha development agenda, and the need to climb ever higher mountains by tackling in the future emerging issues such as energy, climate change, electronic commerce, to give just a few examples. We cannot afford to rest on our laurels in the WTO until our rule books becomes outdated. Nor can we afford to misdiagnose the impasse in current negotiations as being institutional. And as we collectively reflect on what will, quote-unquote, shape the WTO system in the future, I also ask that we recognize the new context in which countries trade. Most products today, whether goods or services, are not made in country X, Y, or Z. Most products in international trade are now, quote-unquote, made in the world. And this means that the boundaries of the nation-state are no longer the only relevant boundaries to take into account. Countries that impose tariffs on imported products may be imposing tariffs on no one other than themselves. Countries that hand out subsidies domestically to certain sectors may be subsidizing none other than their competitor if that competitor is based on their home turf. So the globalization of the manufacturing process is such that it makes even less sense now than it did before to obstruct trade. And this new reality requires that we go back and think about what it means to actually trade in today's world. It also speaks to new methods of measuring trade. We can no longer measure trade by counting goods and services crossing borders. We need to look at where has the value being added to these goods. And the same goes for job creation. Jobs lost at home and trade opening creates job lost may simply mean jobs created for our very own citizens abroad. And in fact, the very calculation of job quote-unquote losses would itself need to take into account of this new reality. So, updating our WTO rulebook, in my view, must bring with it new concepts, new understandings of international trade. As country X sits opposite to country Y at the WTO negotiating table, it must realize that it is no longer totally independent of it. Its products may be produced and re-exported from abroad, and its citizens may be residing elsewhere. So facilitating trade in this new world is what we must turn our mind to, and we of course must also turn our minds also to the accompanying policies of world trade, environmental, social, domestic policies alike, things we can ill afford having trade run in a vacuum. Greater clarity on these issues, as well as on the rich menu of topics that you have put on the table, will hopefully help take us forward. I look forward to meeting as many of you in person as I can over the course of the next few days. That's the end of my introductory remarks. Thank you for your attention. We will now turn to the first roundtable, which we've put in the able hands of Gideon Rachman as a moderator. So he now has the floor. And let's try, and I'm sure Gideon has this in mind, to make this first session as interactive, lively as possible. Gideon, your turn.